A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Bailey, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 19. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Jekyll, the Jekyll and Hyde type miniseries from 2007. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon in England.
As the story progresses in Jekyll, the story is really quite complex and becomes very involved. And one of the first big steps in it is Hyde discovers his family, or at least Dr. Jackman's family, and whether the two children are Hyde's children as well as Jackman's children, whether Claire is Hyde's wife as well as Jackman's wife. These are things that are dealt with in some depth throughout the series. But at the beginning of the story, there is this very well-organized truce between Jackman and Hyde, where Jackman has his time, and Hyde has his time, and all the changes from one to the other are scheduled. They carry a little digital recorder so they can leave messages for each other. Each one has his secrets and has boundaries that the other one knows he can't and shouldn't cross. Jackman keeps it as a secret that he has a wife and two children, these twin boys he has. Hyde discovers about Claire and the two children. Hyde wants to have a relationship with them as well. And there's this contention and this battle that starts between Jackman and Hyde, where Jackman wants the wife and children to be his wife and his children and not Hyde's. And he believes Hyde might harm them. Hyde believes he should also have a relationship with them. It's not clear if it's just a loving relationship or if maybe Hyde would harm them. So it becomes quite complicated. And this is where this type of political give and take between Tom and Hyde is quite powerful, and where it begins to take form.
And there's an intense scene when one of the characters in the story inadvertently reveals to Hyde about the existence of Jackman's wife and kids, because it's in a darkened room, and basically the character doesn't realise that the transformations actually happened while she was talking, which is it's very well done, because we don't see the transformation, we just suddenly realise it's happened, like the character herself. Interestingly, his kids, Tom Jackman's kids, they're twin boys, and they're called Edward and Henry, which is obviously a nod back to the original novel, because it was Henry Jekyll and Edward Hyde in the original.
They never do refer to Edward Hyde in this version, so that is a nice little mention that you have the Edward and Henry there. It gives you that inkling as to maybe something's going on with those kids too.
While this is going on with Tom and Hyde battling over Jackman's family, we've also got the search for the truth about what's happened. And so we have Tom with the two detectives who we've mentioned, Miranda Callender and her assistant Min. They're carrying on their investigation of how Dr. Jackman can be related to Henry Jekyll. Because as we said, this series takes the premise that Henry Jekyll really existed, and that he was a friend of Robert Louis Stevenson, and Stevenson wrote the book about him, but that he's known to have had no descendants, so there's no way that Tom Jackman can be a descendant of Jekyll. So they sort of investigate how this mystery has come about, how this character's walking around with a version of Hyde.
Yes, there are many layers that start to be peeled back, and then other layers fall in to replace them, so there's this wonderful complex story of us discovering the truth and then being surprised by something else that's there. And one of the elements that comes into this is the conspiracy part of the story, which was a big addition and a big change from the original style of The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There is an organization or a corporation of some sort that we initially don't know a lot about, but they have taken it upon themselves to follow Jackman and to look for Hyde. They hired Benjamin Lennox, this sort of darkly humorous military type character that we referred to earlier, They've hired this guy and a bunch of bodyguards and ex-soldiers and the like to hunt down Hyde. So there's this net tightening as things go to find and capture Hyde for reasons that are not always entirely clear.
It all adds to the entertainment and tension, really. We've got these different bits of the story going on. We've got Jackman versus Hyde for the family. We've got the detectives trying to find out how on earth he can be descended from the original Dr. Jekyll. And then we've got the bad guys pursuing Hyde for whatever reasons they have, but they want him. And then as the story continues, we also get this other element added in, which is a touch of the original. And we get, I think in the fourth or fifth episodes, we get a bit of flashback to the original Dr. Henry Jekyll, who's again played by James Nesbitt. And we see him meeting with his friend Robert Louis Stevenson. And we get a little cameo role for Mark Gatiss, who's quite well known in Britain for being one of the League of Gentlemen comedy show, but he's also a huge sort of regular in British science fiction. He's a big Doctor Who fan, and he's written for the new Doctor Who, and he's been in an episode of the new Doctor Who as well. And that's quite well done. We get these sort of sepia-toned flashbacks where we see the original Dr. Jekyll. So it's all going on. It's all making the story just really sort of enjoyable and entertaining.
One of the things they do as the story progresses is they start to play with time in terms of the chronology of how this story is being told. It starts in a typical, strictly chronological way, and then we get an episode that starts jumping from after some key events have happened to before them, progressing through them and giving you that type of jumping around that has actually become fairly popular and happens on a number of different current and recent series now. And then we went from that into things that give us flashback to earlier in Tom's life and all sorts of various things happening, and then going to a very different sort of flashback where we're jumping back to 1886 and seeing the original Dr. Jekyll and seeing Robert Louis Stevenson as well.
And Moffat is he's the master of the non-chronological timeline with stories jumping around in time. He does it very well here, and of course he's done it elsewhere. And I said I wasn't going to mention it, but he did it in Blink, of course. And I think also he jumped around in time in the Girl in the Fireplace episode of Doctor Who he wrote.
The secret of this potion, you are certain, is it known to you alone?
Yes.
You are wrong. It is known to one other.
Who?
Me.
What do you see? What are you seeing now?
Tell us what you see.
It's like Victorian times. And Daddy's here. No, not Daddy.
Granddad. No, great-granddad. Great-great whatever.
Dr. Jekyll. The original.
Doesn't look a bit like Spencer Tracy.
We've mentioned already the performances has been a big part of the enjoyment factor in Jekyll. And I think they're all round great. I mean, we've mentioned James Nesbitt. He's done a fantastic job in the dual role, both as the sort of larger-than-life, strange and intimidating Hyde, but also as the sort of more quiet, repressed and ordinary Tom Jackman, who's discovering what on earth is happening to him. And then we've got sinister stuff from Dennis Lawson. We've got the female characters, his wife Claire, his young assistant. They're all really all-round great performances, plus Benjamin Lennox really giving it his all as well. It's difficult to find fault, really.
Yes, the performances in here were definitely strong, and the characters were all well-written. I think just about every character and every performance is really engaging in this. The only sort of exception to a point was Michelle Ryan as Catherine Reimer, the young psychiatric nurse, and she was perfectly good in this. She filled that role, but she didn't make it as engaging and as unique and powerful as almost every other character. Just seeing characters like Min and Miranda, and Min was mainly a comic relief character, but there was something so subtle to her performance there, and the chemistry between Min and Miranda was just great. When you first meet Claire Jackman, she's this sort of typical wife of the main character, very sympathetic and the empathic character. As things progress, she goes in directions that we don't expect, and that was something that was really neat, that really worked well in this. And the other characters, they were basically all strong, and they were all well written. There were characters who seemed not to be very significant and became significant in unexpected ways. There were at least one or two characters who died and were written out of the series at times when you wouldn't expect it, when you'd expect them to continue on further. So there were lots of complex and subtle things with the characters, both from the writing and from the performances.
Michelle Ryan as Catherine Rymer is interesting because she was hugely popular in Britain for a part in a long-running soap opera, EastEnders. But as you say, there's part of her performance doesn't quite work. Particularly, I had a slight problem with the fact that her character is supposed to have fallen in love with Tom Jackman, which they never really convinced me on that part, not least because, you know, he's about 20 years older than her. It does seem a bit unlikely. There is another performance which I had some problems with, but it's a bit difficult to talk about without revealing too much about the story. I think if I say that there's a character who turns up at one point claiming to be Tom Jackman's mother, which is a strange performance, seems slightly out of kilter with everything else that's going on.
That was a performance that I felt did work fairly well, actually. So it does depend how this hits you, but on the whole, there were a lot of really good performances in here.
Yeah.
And the writing of the characters was really outstanding. There were also a number of great moments in here. Moments like this sequence that took place at a zoo where they basically contrived to put someone in danger of the lions and to have Jackman turn into Hyde to confront these lions. And it was a great over-the-top but very powerful performance by Nesbitt as Hyde.
And we really get all the Lion King and the Lion King of the Jungle stuff going on then with Hyde versus the lions. As you say, it's a fantastic scene. It's one of the few moments where I think we get any special effects in the show, because most of the rest of it, as you said, was done with just lighting and makeup and performance.
There was very little done in this series in terms of computer-generated effects and post-production effects in general. There were a couple of things, but they were generally very minor. The transformation between Jekyll and Hyde is something where you never actually see a morphing effect or some kind of computer-generated effect to twist one into the other. And I think that added to the mystery of things and made things work well. There was also a very nice sense of detail in this in terms of how it looked at the original story when you had these flashbacks to 1886 and so on. One of the things they referred to was Dr. Jekyll as opposed to Dr. Jekyll, because the original pronunciation that Stevenson wanted was actually Dr. Jekyll, and he spent the rest of his life telling people to pronounce it Dr. Jekyll. In this version, they had Mark Gatiss as Stevenson talking to Dr. Jekyll and referred to it as the original pronunciation.
And it fits right in. It seems to work perfectly, doesn't it?
Yes.
As Brian said, there's some great scenes and setups. There's a very brief but memorable moment where a character is trying to flush a severed ear down a toilet, which for some reason really stuck out for me. And there's also the hunt in the flat. I don't know if we want to talk about that. Jackman has bought, when he's moved out from his wife, he's bought this flat with lots of rooms in it, which he's going to live in, but also he's going to use it to help sort of incarcerate Hyde if Hyde misbehaves. And that's where the character Catherine Rymer comes to work for him. And there's a sequence in one of the episodes where she's alone, or thinks she's alone in the flat, but finds out that Hyde is there, and or Hyde has escaped, and he's sort of hunting her through these rooms, which is quite an intense moment in the series.
Yes, it's very dark and very engaging. There is a sense of tension and even nervous tension in this series throughout the series that works very well. It's there in the script, I think, and both directors played it up quite well, and the cinematography and the lighting worked for that as well. The kind of tension and kind of suspense you get has a very Hitchcock-influenced kind of feel to it.
It's a very enjoyable romp. It just flies along. It's entertaining. It's, you know, as you say, there's tension, there's great performances, there's big set pieces in the bad guy's base and the zoo. But also with Stephen Moffat, we're going to get plenty of humor along the way. And we mentioned some of the comic relief. There's a particular sort of setup to a big joke, I think, at the start of the final episode, which is all about this mercenary character who's been hired to deal with Hyde by the bad guys. And it sets up for quite a payoff with a joke.
That's right. There was that. There was the Patterson Joseph character, Benjamin Lennox, who is always making jokes. It has this wonderful, dark, twisted sense of humor, and it makes him a sort of comic character, but also a serious character. And then you had Min, who was a comic character, particularly in relation to the other detective, her boss, Miranda. because the relationship between the two of them is quite comic. And I think Min is mostly a comic character, but I didn't really notice that the first time I watched it, because she fits into it very well, and that relationship really feels like it should be there, and it's part of what makes this.
As you say, the character Min is a sort of comic character for comic relief. She's pregnant. I mean, the actress became pregnant, I think, before they started production, and so Moffat, being such a clever writer, managed to write it in. The way Jekyll swings from the comic relief to moments of tension and scariness, there's moments when the detectives realise things aren't going quite so well for them, where you can see Min becoming quite scared and upset, both by the presence of Hyde, but also by the presence of the bad guys. And that works very well. Again, this swinging backwards and forwards between the tension and the light relief.
Yes, it was one of those situations where the actress had been cast before she was pregnant. They easily could have recast someone to avoid that issue and get a woman who wasn't pregnant, but they decided to write that into the story instead, and it ended up working quite well.
It works very well. Fantastic job. And of course, I don't think you could have done it with another actress. She was so good in the part.
Ever killed anyone, Benjamin? Not personally. I have people. You're missing out. It's like sex, only there's a winner. Thought you might be here somewhere. Come in. You know what? I'm doing fine just here.
You nervous, Benjamin?
Not nervous. No. I'm just a little lying away.
Not nice to turn down someone's hospitality, Benjamin. I've got my pride.
You can control them?
They're just lions, can't you?
Now, we've talked a lot about the things that we liked in Jekyll and the things that worked well. So we should mention the things that didn't work as well. And there really aren't that many of them.
Not many at all.
There are a few.
I felt that the pacing dropped off a little bit in the second half of the series. And that, in particular, I think in episode 4 or 5, partly I think because in episode 4 or 5, they actually have to start explaining some of what's going on. But it may also have been a reflection of the new director and the fact that they'd had this break in production.
This is actually a classic complaint about longer serials from Doctor Who and from other series. When you have something as long as 6 episodes, the 5th episode, that second last episode, doesn't have very much happening in it that drives the plot. In some ways, that applies to this. What ends up happening in the second half is it starts complicating things in the typical complication stage of the plot, but it really complicates things, and it draws things from earlier periods of time and really makes things more convoluted and brings in all these questions, and that is either a plus or a minus. In some ways, I enjoyed some of that, but it does take a little bit of the wind out of the sails in some ways. For the first half of the story, Jackman is really driving the plot for the most part, and Jackman in the present day has less of a role in those 4th and 5th episodes.
Yes, as you say, there's lots of flashback stuff going on. Although, as you say, we also get the great fun of the original Jekyll and Robert Louis Stevenson.
That's right. So this type of real complexity and becoming very convoluted and the pacing perhaps suffering, this is the sort of style it took on in the latter half. Personally, I liked a lot of that, but there are some weaknesses in that you tend to lose a little bit of where you're going.
But of course, we then get episode 6 where it all wraps up beautifully and we get drama and reveals, and yeah, it's all great stuff. And of course, that episode is also the only episode where they changed the title, didn't they? All the previous episodes have been titled Jekyll, which appears on screen, but for episode 6...
it was titled Hyde.
It says Hyde.
You see the title Jekyll twice, usually. Once in the very opening moments, and then you have the first one or two events of the episode, and then a full title sequence that says Jekyll. And in that full title sequence, they named it Hyde, which was great, because that was the point where it really became about Hyde rather than about Jekyll. And it was also, in some ways, where Hyde starts to become more of an adult character and less of a child.
He has to grow up in the last episode.
That's right. And that was something that worked very well. You see, even talking about the weak points, we managed to get back onto the strong points.
We did, actually, yes. It does. It does bring you back to the good points. I did have a slight problem, as I often do, with the bad guys and what was the motivation of the bad guys. We know they're pursuing Hyde, but it doesn't seem to be entirely clear, as it so often, you know, it's not with these big corporation bad guys, as to why they want him. There is a moment towards the end of the story where the characters are in a basement of one of the bad guys' sort of bases. I think they're in the basement of a big country house. It's a scene that probably owes something to the fourth Aliens movie, Alien 4, with the Joss Whedon script. If you've seen that movie, you'll probably recognize this scene. One of the characters reveals that the corporation were using the sort of Tom Jackman research and the Mr. Hyde research to make money by producing drugs from antibodies. But it's a bit vague.
It is. And it keeps it mysterious, but in a certain way, it does give you that idea of, well, why are they doing this?
Yes.
There's a sense that Hyde is so advanced as a creature and so far beyond us that he represents this amazing potential to science, and that's what they're going for. It's all quite vague and mysterious, and it might have been nicer to have a little bit more on that. We also don't know how they got the resources they have, because apparently they have vast quantities of money. And the only hint as to how they might have obtained that is that the corporation existed when Jekyll died, when the original Jekyll died, and they took custody of his body. So perhaps they were able to get something from the body of Dr. Jekyll and obtain this large amount of money from that, because apparently they have almost limitless resources.
They've got vast amounts of money, and they throw huge amounts at trying to capture Hyde, and they've got all sorts of whiz-bang technology to do it.
They make the point of how much money they have. It's really well described. It works well. It's neat having them as an opponent in this story, but there are some things that are left vague, and we wonder, well, does that really work, that they have all this money and they're so intent on getting a hold of Hyde? Well, it's interesting.
It is interesting. It's also interesting, just quickly, that they're called, the company, the organization is called Klein and Utterson, which is another little nod back to one of the characters from the original book.
Yes, of course. Now, the availability of Jekyll is very good. There's a 2-disc DVD set that's out in both Region 1 and Region 2 versions, so you can get it in Europe or in North America. It has these slightly extended versions of the episodes. They're about 55 minutes long each. It's also, I guess, rated R because they have some coarse language in the DVD version that was removed for the BBC broadcast. It has a couple of commentaries on it and some extra features.
And as you say, it's very easily available. I suppose we should also mention that there is the possibility that there could be a sequel. And certainly I think that's left open to a certain degree at the end of the series. Not least because of the fact that Tom Jackman has these twin boys called Eddie and Henry, who we sort of get the impression towards the end that they may have their own special abilities, that they may have inherited something as well. So there's all sorts of possibilities for a sequel. Having said that, now that Stephen Moffat's got the Doctor Who gig full-time, he may well be rather busy.
Yes, I'm not expecting that there will be a sequel to this, but it was definitely left open, and quite deliberately so. So we'll see. It's a possibility.
Yeah, maybe they planned for one, but of course, as I say, Stephen Moffat's going to be rather busy next year, I think.
And I think this brings us neatly into our recommendations. You probably have the idea that both of us like this show. It is really very good. It's well worth getting. It's a kind of sci-fi thriller that has lots of suspense to it. It has a nice bit of humor mixed into it without being a comedy. It's really a suspense thriller with lots of sci-fi mixed in. The whole thing on DVD is about 5.5 hours long. It's really worth seeing. It's one of the good ones, for sure.
It's another solid recommendation from us on British Invaders. As Brian said, it's got tension, it's got humour, it's got high drama, and it's just really an entertaining, enjoyable ride. You just sort of follow the roller coaster through. You know, we've talked in detail about some of the aspects, but really, you could just sit back and enjoy it. It's great fun.
Yes, there's so much in this, and there's a lot that we haven't even touched on as well. So it's really quite a show, and it's worth looking at.
And even when we've had our little sort of nitpicks about some of the elements, as Brian said, we've just got back to, it brings us back to the good parts of the show.
So, in summary, Jekyll is a 2007 6-episode TV serial, about 5.5 hours in length. It is a retelling of the original Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, at the same time as being a sequel to The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It has lots of suspense and tension. It tells the Jekyll and Hyde story very well by jumping in as it's already begun and jumping around to go back to earlier parts of it later in the show. It's complex, it's involved, it adds new elements to the Jekyll and Hyde idea, like this conspiracy corporation that is such a major part of it, and also this type of political relationship between Jackman and Hyde. It is a great show, well worth seeing.
Totally agree.
You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com. and at www.britishinvaders.com. We are looking into doing another bonus episode that would hopefully include lots of great feedback from all of our listeners and comments about what you'd like to hear, where you agree with us and don't agree with us about the things we've talked about already, what we shouldn't have covered that we have covered, what we should cover, all of these things. So please let us know at britishinvaders@gmail.com. If you can send us MP3s with your comments, that would be great. If not, just send us emails and hopefully we can set something up for pretty entertaining bonus episode with lots of points of view from different people.
That would be excellent. Look forward to it.
Our next episode will cover UFO, which was an early 70s show by Gerry Anderson with alien invaders and all sorts of fun stuff.
And it's got purple wigs.
It certainly does.
Purple wigs and shiny suits. And maybe we won't be totally in agreement on the show next time. We'll find out.
Who knows? So we're done with this one. So this is Brian from Canada signing off.
And this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.